welcome to the Film Yarns podcast. Tenet is the film that we watched this week. Came out this year, 2020. Science fiction action thriller. I think I've read that a few times with a couple of other ones. It always just sounds funny when you read, like, when there's that many genres in one title. It wasn't that heavy on the sci-fi, yeah, I guess, apart from the time travel.
I heard someone call it, describe it as sci-spy. I think that's a pretty good way of describing it.
Yeah, because it's like there's no James Bond film with time travel, is there? But yeah, so that's a fair sci-spy.
This is totally the James Bond film that we didn't get this year, because usually they come out in installments and stuff, and this would have been it. This is
Weren't they making one was it Idris Elba?
Ooh, I don't know, but I would like that.
Because there was all the memes that were like, oh, you can't have a black James Bond, blah, blah, blah. Wasn't that a thing? Mm. But it was for an actual James Bond
movie. Maybe, yeah, because I remember Jamie Foxx auditioned or something like that, or he was like, I want to do it.
He'd be all right for it.
But I don't know. Yeah, I see where the James Bondness of Tenet comes from, though. You know, it's got all the beautiful locations. It's always like James Bond inevitably is always about like the dubious relation that rich people have amongst each other. There's lots of backstabbing. There's lots of like millions of dollars on the table being thrown around. There's lots of like money transferring through like arms or stocks or art or something.
Michael Caine just playing Michael Caine. Yeah. Like that kind of, yeah. I didn't like that scene, I have to say. Like, it was just, you know, I'm Michael Caine. Like, you've got to get the secret thing. And it's just like, fuck. Like, it just seemed like such a reprise. They just changed the words around. Like, they're just like, yeah, just do what you do. And he's like, yep, got it. He didn't even need to read a script.
I kind of love that. I kind of love that they were just like, we just want you to be the person you are whenever you're like, in a Guy Ritchie film.
I just don't like this kind of meme stuff in like a serious movie that takes itself very seriously, you know? It's the same as in The Force Awakens, when there's like jokes in the fight scenes and they try to be all meta. Yeah. There's a joke, you know, where he's fighting is it Ben? Ben Solo is fighting
in the Force.
Someone. And they just crack a joke, and I was just immediately like, I'm out.
Which one's The Force Awakens? The one with Rey and stuff?
I thought it was the first of the new ones.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I have no idea. I can't remember. I think I've only seen that film once. I'll have to watch it again.
Because there was one of them that I did like.
The last one. That shit was crazy.
Well, I thought the one before that was pretty good. I don't know. I might check them out again sometime. But I think it was just one of them, like the first of the new ones where I was kind of like, oh, it was just a bit new-agey.
Yeah, I think with the new Star Wars trilogy, the whole thing was like, we have to somehow tie this into advertising. Like, and we have to appeal to literally everybody, because once upon a time there was like sci-fi nerds and like stoners or whatever when sci-fi first came out, and it was just like, when Star Wars just came out, and now it's just like everybody, you know, your granddad or your grandma, and also like your little cousin or your grandchild, they all like Star Wars for various different reasons, but they're all part of the same fanship.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to like get all that sort of stuff. And I don't think Disney are really giving out checks just so you can do some experimental stuff. They're like, I want to see like big money back.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so they're going to be doing it like, they're going to be like, oh, this is Star Wars. This is Star Wars. Remember, this is Star Wars. So.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so...
Yes, sorry.
No, it's all good. We can take it wherever we want, and the three people listening can fuck off and not listen. No, it's fine. I would listen to us. So this film, Tenet, was written and directed by Christopher Nolan. I feel like he hypes it up. He's like, I've been writing this for 20 years, man. Like, trying to figure out how I'm going to make the plot make sense. produced with Emma Thomas. Co-production between UK and USA, stars John David Washington, Robert Pattinson, Elizabeth Debicki. This guy's he's literally Dimple Kapadia is the Indian lady. Michael Caine.
The arms dealer.
And Kenneth Branagh is the Russian guy.
Pretty... pretty great cast. I love John David Washington. I think when I saw him in Black Klansman, I was just like, fuck, this guy's sick.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. And also, like, obviously he's a good stunt actor because he's an athlete. So like he kind of any scenes involving like him doing like, 'cause he did a few of his stunts for this. So anything where he's like running or doing something like he looks realistic because he is an athlete. I felt like I didn't know if it was the writing or 'cause I haven't seen him in I haven't seen Black Klansman, but I thought some of the dialogue like was just kind of forced. I don't know if you know, I can't say whether it was like his acting or the writing itself. Like just like there were some times where it was just like seemed really forced. I or kind of just the expositional nature of Tenet where like they have just be like explaining some shit.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I guess that sort of lends itself to it's like Bond comparison as well, or it's like relationship to Bond, because all of those sort of like cheesy genre specific things of the Bond genre are in this as well. Like there's a lot of like exposition, there's a lot of kind of like funny sort of half jokes and double entendres and stuff like that as well.
yeah.
So if you don't like it, like I know people who absolutely hate that kind of stuff and just can't sit, deal with it. And I know people who love it and just are like fans of that style of film. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought it was okay in that sense. I just feel like it could have been written better. I saw, like, I'm kind of stealing this criticism of someone else, but it just phrased it well, where they said, like, you know, Nolan's come up with this whole reverse entropy thing, which is like a fair plot device, but then he's kind of forced the story around that a little bit too much, where it's just like he's like he had to make things kind of work around that premise, and then that kind of like detracts from the quality of other elements, like the dialogue, because it's just like really forced to. It's like it's got to kind of make sense around this somewhat nonsensical plot device, like. I mean, we've spoken about this before, where like different films or TV shows, like their approach to the contradictions of time travel. So, for example, in there was the end of Terminator, where she explains something, or like that, you know, they talk about like a grandfather paradox or something, and then and it's just like there's different ways, and it's always like it seems like there's always awkward and less awkward ways of doing it. I guess using
For sure,
dialogue to
like
do
I
it is always the worst way.
I guess the thing with Terminator, it was kind of funny, and I guess like it was also the 80s, so maybe like there was a firm desire for exposition or like some sort of like wrapping up, or even like you could look at it this way and say that like the end of Terminator 1 was actually the way that they could make sure that there would be sequels. In that you could firmly say like, okay, we can just open this loop up. We can just say like, look at all these different points. Whereas like, I think the thing with Tenet is interesting because like, it turns out that the arms dealer, you know how like
Sato.
the export, yeah,
Oh,
it'll
it's Sato, yeah.
the bomb will go off when he dies. We only find that out later on, and like he's always checking his pulse and stuff, so he's obviously kind of aware. He's obviously aware of it as well. But like, I like that sort of like. We can't really tell the past and we can't really tell the future, but like if you destroy something right in the middle, right in the present, before it's thought of as past or future, that will destroy everything. I think that's kind of an interesting idea. You
Yeah.
know
It's
what I mean?
like,
Because like you kind of have the people who,
no, sorry, I do keep going if you
Go on,
got.
sorry. Well, I just think like, I mean like this film made me think, yeah, about Terminator, and it also sort of reminded me broadly of a few like different things. Like, for instance, like, did you watch the third season of Twin Peaks, the newest one?
Haven't seen any of it.
Okay. Well, anyway, in the third season, there's an episode. I can't remember if it's like 8 or 9 or 10, somewhere around the middle bit of the season. There's an episode that deals with the atomic bomb testing. It's pretty crazy episode, but essentially what I think it's trying to say, or at least my interpretation of it, was that like when something like the atomic bomb was used, it sort of tore the fabric of possibility, and like new evil could be entered into the world. And I think that's sort of the same for this film, in that like in what, Starsgard 12 or whatever it was, one of those secret industrial cities, where it was built around industry around the Cold War. And when the Cold War was over, that was like a pure point of possibility. And that's why this guy was able to experience something from the future back to the past, because that was a point where absolutely anything could happen.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite interesting, anyways. I thought, yeah.
No, that is a cool concept, and it's like, because then it makes it very limitless for
Just do that?
yeah,
Yeah.
sorry, yeah, just it cut a little bit, but it's all good. Yeah, future evil seeping back to the kind of somewhat innocent past. It's a dangerous game.
Yeah, and like it's hard to say because they sort of talk about like the future, people in the future sending these things back because the world is fucked. You know what I mean? Like, and they don't want to have to deal with that, so they want to destroy the world before it gets to that point, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah.
Just I guess a little climate disaster, catastrophe sort of stuff put in there.
Yeah. There was a brief mention. I mean, I could, like the thing. I mean, obviously, this is the type of film that you would definitely benefit from watching an extra time, or you know, two or three. Like same with Inception, where, especially this, I guess, because it
Yeah.
like you'll rewatch and be like, oh, so that was that bit, and like get a better idea of the chronology of things. Like when he fights himself, because
Yeah.
like I notice it like the first time when they're in the vault place, and someone like it's obviously it's the Tenet from the future. I mean, not Tenet, his name's not Tenet. The protagonist comes running at Neil, Robert Pattinson's character, and like he just pushes him off, and it only shows like Robert's reaction, like where he kind of looks a bit bewildered, but then it shows it
Yeah.
later how they make eye contact, and he like. And he's like, oh, it's you from the future, like that's. And then and then he asks him like he's like, oh, what happened? He's like, yeah, I got rid of him or something like that. He kind of lies to the earlier protagonist. It's confusing as fuck, but he's like, you know, so, to not mess up the rest of the progress of the mission. But when you
Yeah.
think about it on that level,
Well,
it's kind of
because he's
like, are
like,
they in an infinite
yeah.
loop? Is he just going to have to keep, you know, completing the mission because there's like multiple versions of himself? I don't know. But then also, and like to
Well,
that end, like at the end
I
of the
think it
movie,
seems like that.
I feel bad for protagonist when, because Neil's like, you're only halfway there. And so he'd just be like, oh, fuck. Like, how much more work have I got to do to like. It's just like you've got to make sure everything happens right in the past and the future. It's like, oh, like, and there's just so much to take care of. And he's just got so much work lying ahead. And he has that confirmed to him by Neil. Like, it's basically like, yeah, you have no free will, but you're going to have to do all this stuff just because you're going to have to do it because you're going to have to do it.
Yeah, I mean that's true, but like I think that an important point of difference there is that like whether is that like sort of interpretation is super deterministic, like you've done this, so you're gonna have to do this. I think Neil says something towards the end is like, I say whatever's happened happens, but that's no excuse for not trying to do and change things. And I think that's really interesting. Like, so he's saying that like yeah, stuff happens and it's like sort of on rails, but there is the ability to change stuff, and you. Because you see Neil at the very start in the opera, because you see the backpack with a little pendant on it. So like he's always in between like scenes all the time, apparently. So,
Even though, yeah,
but
it is weird, yeah,
yeah.
because it seems like Neil's the mastermind, but he tells, I mean, do we call him protagonist or do we call him John?
I guess John, yeah. I thought he had a name in the movie, but maybe I'm wrong. I
I
can't
purposely
really
didn't.
remember. No, he
He's like
doesn't name.
I'm protagonist or something. I'm the protagonist.
The nameless man. Yeah, I think saying, interestingly, I guess if we want to speak about Tenet broadly, is that it does do something. There's sort of like two sort of like big philosophical schools in film, right? And now that, and one is like deterministic, and one is like, don't know, anti-deterministic, pluralistic maybe might be the term. I don't know, but like, something like Terminator or Arrival, or even, I don't know if you saw that Alex Garland series, Devs.
No, I heard of it, but no, I didn't
They
see
are
it.
all it's pretty good. I recommend it. I really enjoyed watching it. I like Alex Garland as well, but they all are like deterministic. They're all like, yes, like the future and the past are happening, and they're all like, we're on this like road towards it, and we can figure it out somehow. Whereas these, it's interesting that there's what I wonder why those two ideas would be so clashing. You know what I mean? Like, why are those two things the big ones? Like,
Yeah.
are they sort of dealing with bigger picture issues of like two sort of large or like popular feelings in society, that like one is like, well, we're kind of fucked, so we just keep moving into fuckness, and the other one's like, you're able to change it, but the change happens right now. Like all these time travel movies talk about the present, like they do the future and the past, but they're always talking about how important it is to be in the present and change the present.
Yeah, no,
I think that's interesting.
that's a good point, and it's a very common sort of just a very common, even like base level philosophical divide for like average people, like your average, not average, I just mean your average person, where they feel a sense of hopelessness for the future. And in some ways it's fair, it's warranted, it's very hard to motivate yourself when you look at the concentration of power that is against you to make a change.
I think that's totally true. And I think the interesting thing as well is that, like, I guess if you think of time rather than like because relativistic or like deterministic, and if you think about it as like pure possibilities in time, like you're a point in time with ultimate possibilities, that's quite that's quite liberating, right? Like it's liberating to think that, like, of course there are like material and like social pressures put on you, but that there is like quite an emancipatory aspect to that. Like, you could really do anything to a certain degree. Like, there
Yeah.
are tons of different possibilities.
It's I guess
Like,
it's almost the like the most typical age old kind of paradox of consciousness, like, do we is reality does reality exist beyond our observation? So does do we have an
exactly.
effect? Do we like is reality constructed around us? And all the kind of most cheesy offshoots of that, like, you just have to believe in yourself and you can achieve anything, blah blah blah. Like, in a way it's true, in a way it's not true. The future is changeable based on your motivation. And then like you get into this kind of paradoxical thinking because you're like, if I did nothing or I did something, like, wouldn't it be exactly the same? And I guess you never really know because you only hear that from people that have
Yeah,
achieved
that's true.
something, and they can only talk retrospectively, like, oh, well, I made a change and I achieved this thing. I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of offshoots of that.
Exactly. And like, I guess like, and that's interesting. You said, I guess for every time someone says that, you have to think like, well, they always risk that failure as well. Like, ultimately there is someone experiencing each failure for each success that you've achieved, I
Yeah,
guess.
exactly.
That might be a bit dark of a way to put it. I don't know,
No, it's
but like,
true. Yeah, because it's
certainly
like
if you win something that has nothing in it.
you never really know because you hear like successful people will say, "Oh, it worked for me and I was average and so then it will work it will definitely work for you because I just believed it." It's like but then you don't really hear like the people that failed, they you could just say like, "Oh, well, you just didn't try hard enough. Like that's why you failed." But everyone like they're sort of saying like it's impossible to fail, but I would argue, I mean, in a non-caring universe that isn't connected to human consciousness, then people could objectively fail, even having tried objectively every possible avenue to achieve something that was possible to achieve. They could just get really unlucky in every way.
For sure, yeah. Exactly. Or they could come up against someone so brilliant that there was no competition, I guess, to a certain degree. But no, I think it's interesting, right? And I think something else that this film sort of led me to was, I don't know, do you remember there was a debate between, it was like a correspondence maybe between Einstein and Bergson. You know the philosopher Henri Bergson?
No, not familiar, unfortunately.
He was pretty famous. I think maybe the most contemporary philosopher, I guess, that would be like inheriting his star would be like someone like Deleuze or Guattari. You ever heard of those two? But he and Einstein had sort of like a kind of public debate over Einstein's theory of relativity, and he was like, well, yes, like scientifically these rules make sense, the equations make sense, and like you're right, but in terms of epistemology or in terms of like a subjective experience of time, you're totally wrong. Like, because he thinks of time as like disjunctive and mobile, like it's always moving, it's always broken up, like crystals or shards or something, I guess. Like, and like it's like a crystal or a shard, it has like all those different faces. It could go really anywhere, I guess. Whereas like I have quite a basic understanding of the theory of relativity. It's quite like deterministic, right? Like you have your positions, and based on positions, time is related to that, right? Like,
Yeah,
so
but what
is that,
yeah, but there's an analogy
is
that
that
they
right?
normally use to explain it where like you have like slices of time. So like and like you have one time slice. I don't know. It does get pretty confusing like when you're speaking about relativity and distance and stuff, distance and velocity.
But it must, but I guess like the thing about Einstein's theory would be that like it's true for everyone all the time based on your distance or your velocity or the positioning of everything, right? Like,
Like I guess he just proved that
whereas
it all adds up. He proved that there's no contradiction or break. So like someone can time travel in the way that you can go to a place with extreme gravity
speed,
or you can
right?
travel really fast. You can do either of those two things and time will move slower for you and then you could come back. Like this could happen, like you could go and do that and come back and then where
They
you
would be
would have
older,
think
you'd be
that
younger.
everyone would have experienced, you have that as a proof and a measurement to say like, oh, okay, like those people experienced more time than I did in that time from my perspective. He just proved that
Exactly.
that
And I
wasn't
guess
breaking any physical laws, basically.
that wasn't a physical law.
No, he proved that that wasn't a, there's no breaking of, like there's no, nothing gets broken in our like mathematical rules of space and time in doing that.
Well, could in that case, does that mean that like the team of astronauts spending time in the International Space Station experience time a little slower than us on Earth, or
Yeah, I can't remember if it's slower or faster. It's like a, I think it's like less than a second, after like a few years. It's
but
like a
there is
really
a
small
difference,
amount,
right?
but there's, yeah, there's a difference, yeah. I
Yeah,
think it's
okay,
because
so and
they're going really,
that would prove the
I
theory,
think it's
right?
because of their velocity, because they're going really fast.
Right, of course. And I don't know if like you're happy to do this, but we can sort of broaden out tenet, just look at Nolan in general and sort of move to something like Interstellar. Wait, did we do it?
No, we didn't do Interstellar.
Or were we just talking about it? I
We were
think we just talked
just
about it one
talked about it.
time.
I mean, Interstellar like isn't as blurry with the kind of, I mean, there's things that wouldn't like that don't add up in Tenet. Like if you really like, I mean, supposedly he consulted a theoretical physicist, blah blah blah. But like, I don't like.
What doesn't add up, I
Well, I
guess?
don't like how it's very human to just like section off objects like a bullet and say the bullet is the bullet and nothing else is part of the bullet. But in reality, the bullet never like has a
Everything
start or an
affects
end
everything.
kind of thing. It's just like, it's actually a fluid composition of, quantum effects and like and probabilities that say like all the particles will always be there at this time when you observe them and stuff like that. So that for that reason, it's like you couldn't take a human object. I'm not saying it's human, like it's a, it's just that like we are the ones that define it as an object, whereas the universe, like everything is kind of just one thing from the perspective of the universe. So like you wouldn't be able to just take one object and invert its entropy like that. I don't think that's the part that doesn't quite make sense. And then have it stay inverted. But you know, it's just like, I don't like it when films kind of use that, like, don't worry, physics is over your head to the average viewer. And then they'll just take it at face value and be like, whoa, well, like that's a crazy possibility that like someone could make a machine that could do that.
Well, I think I understand that criticism, but I think it's not necessarily like, you know, don't worry, everyone watching at home doesn't really have, like, I don't know, a master's in physics or whatever. But that, like, what if people have been wrong before? Like, there have been revolutions in science that have really changed the game. So, like, it's entirely possible that science could change. And if it were to change, we might be seeing something like this. And I think you've got to sort of take the film in its own logic, like bringing in something else.
That's true. I'm totally, like, I feel like it would be unfair. You know, you can't criticize a film and say, like, oh, that's not possible. You know, like, film is the arena to, like, do these sorts of things. So,
yeah. It'd be like going to a gallery exhibition and looking at all the paintings of people and being like, that's not what a person looks like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was reading about that last night. I think it was like Picasso or someone like that, and someone was saying that doesn't look anything like my wife. Like, I'll show you what my wife looks like. And he pulls out a picture, like, from his wallet. And Picasso inspected it, and he's like, "Whoa, she's very small and flat."
Yeah, I guess you have to have jokes like that. You need that's a good disarming.
But I guess the only
mechanism.
The
but
thing
true,
that can make that the like the science criticism of Tenet fair is just to say that, like, in a film that takes itself very seriously, and all the other aspects, like, you know, they don't have physics-defying explosions or cars jumping like that. Like, so it's. It kind of is a little bit contradictory when they have this one major thing that is, like, a little bit just hard to add up into the realism of the story itself.
Reversed. Yeah, I mean, realism, this film, any Nolan film, hard to say how real. You know, we're looking at something a little bit... a little bit magical, a little bit science fiction-y.
Yeah, I guess, but I'm just saying, like, once if you say, like, once the film starts to, like why not take it even further kind of thing? Like, rather than just having... It's just like, I just would prefer it to be all or nothing, I guess. And then just take it a bit more sci-fi.
I mean, I'm a massive fan of, like, magic realism and science fiction realism and stuff like that, where it's just like a... more time, and like it never comes back, and it's not really played out, or it is slightly. But I can totally understand you want a science fiction film or something like that. In terms of Tenet, like talking about like something like Shutter Island or Inception or Memento or whatever, like what's Nolan trying to do here? I mean, even something like which Batman is the one with Bane in it? Is it number two, like The Dark Knight Rises or something?
Yeah, three. I think that's three. But
three. I think even there, you sort of have him doing time stuff because, like, you know, I was raised in the darkness, sort of thing. Like, they live in this hole in the ground, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like jail is, I guess, a form of. What would the word be?
Yeah, like, it was a form of time travel, like in terms of perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Negation, like you're taken away from travel.
Yeah, you lose your sense of, you know, all the objects you normally use to measure time, like sunlight and passing
and
days.
Time
would
become spatialized to a certain like you would think of time in terms of, like, you know, space in terms of the prison. So I think there's that there, but like. Applying it to something like even Shutter Island, because that's, you know, the past coming back through, like, repression and stuff coming back to, like, inhabit the present.
Yeah.
I mean, Interstellar with the, like, he's sort of, like, spreading apart time to be, like, fourth dimensional. or more maybe, fifth dimensional.
Yeah, I'm not too. It's yeah, I know. I don't want to be that guy who's like, that couldn't, like, that's not possible. That couldn't happen. That was the only, that kind of did bother me in Interstellar, like, when just the
Looked
way
cool
that
though,
they, yeah, but the
didn't
way
it?
that they portray, like, the fourth dimension, it, again, it was too, like, humanized. I just feel like it should be just more nonsensical and psychedelic because it's still, like, geometric and everything. And then he's like, I mean, I get it, it was a cool portrayal, and he's kind of like moving along like bands of time, but in space. Like, that's cool. But yeah, there was just a certain part of it, like, he just talks, and then the audio is normal. I don't know. Like, it was fair. You know,
That's true.
what else
That
can
would
you
be
do?
interesting.
Like,
I think that's interesting what you say about would sound be in band form if images were or time was as well? How would that work?
yeah, I mean, sound is just, yeah, sound is pressure and time. So I don't know. But like, it's no one's thing, you know. I like Memento the most of all his films, but I haven't seen it in ages.
Yeah, it is good. I mean, I said it before and I'll say it again. He just keeps trying to remake it in different ways. He's like, this time we're doing Memento, but we're doing like climate science fiction. This time we're doing it, but we're doing a James Bond film with Memento in it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think just when he gets the big budget, he goes a bit too like cheesy Hollywood with it, and that's what I don't like. So that's what I didn't like about Interstellar, and that's what I didn't like about Tenet, where it's just a bit too much cheese. Like, especially Sato's character, like, he's just such a typical Russian villain. Like, the accent, like, they could have gotten a real Russian. You know, I think he's Irish or something.
Oh, really?
Branagh. Yeah, it just, as soon as I heard him speak, I was just like, oh, come on. It just, like, I didn't hate the film. It kind of grew on me a bit. There's just like a bunch of stuff that I could list that really bothered me and stopped it from being a great film for me. And most of those things, if I had to categorize most of those, criticisms, they would just be in the category of like very typical Hollywood film things that can ruin an otherwise like cool, interesting story and plot.
I mean, hey, it's good. I guess now it's hard to make a film without pandering somewhat.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's quite hard to receive
Well,
any sort of funding
it
without them
wasn't,
being
I
like, you got
mean,
to do this. And
I could, it wasn't very successful financially, but that could also be due to COVID.
oh,
So, like,
really?
yeah, it's not the fairest criticism because, like, no one was going to the cinema this year.
I mean, now it's online now for like $20 if you want to buy it
Oh, true.
to stream or something, which I think is a bit of a betrayal because like $20 to stream something is fucking nuts. Like, I should
Yeah.
own that if I have to pay
Yeah,
20 bucks,
that's crazy, man.
but whatever. I think
I mean,
I don't know.
I don't
Like,
want you to think
I
that I
stayed at the
straight up
cinema
hated
when
the
it came
film.
out. No, I
If
mean,
you
look,
had to criticize it, what did you like the least? What would you change?
I guess the sort of like romance around like the villain, what's her name? Who was the art dealer? Well, I can't remember
Cat.
what her name was. That seemed a little bit like, whatever. But like
A
in
little bit
terms of the
plastered on.
larger concern, which was just, but it sort of worked for like the sort of like Bondy mobby sort of thing that was going on in the middle of it, which was like, are you messing with my woman? No, I want to get my child back. There was something else going on there. There was like a family drama happening in the middle, which I thought was interesting. Like, I could have done more or less. I don't know, but maybe that would have been better. I'm not sure. But I thought watching this film, first time I watched it, I saw it when it came out in the cinema, and I thought like, Nolan's been playing Metal Gear Solid because this is a serious Metal Gear Solid start, like total, like especially when the final sort of like climactic battle come scene where it's like the inverted and the non-inverted
There's people
at the
running
same time.
backwards
That
and
was
stuff.
Nuts,
Yeah.
but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it would have been, I didn't see it at the cinema, and that would make a big difference to our perspective on it. And like, I think it's not unfair for a film to be better on, you know, a better system, better sound and bigger screen. Like that's the same for, you know, older Tarkovsky films as well. So it's not like, oh, just cause it's modern, it needs it, you know, it can't stand on its own. Like that's, it's, you know, some are just more, timbral, you know, they need a big screen and a big sound system to give you the benefit. Like that's part of the film. That's fair enough.
I think when it comes to something like lots of like gunplay, I guess, in films, I want to hear like a surround sound, you know, I want to hear like explosions and ricochets, and I want to hear, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I thought the score was pretty
something
cool.
Something like this
with
where it's
like
fast cars and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the synths and stuff, but the mixing, like this is a common thing, like the dialogue mixing was pretty trash, like especially all the scenes when they have a mask on and he's like rrr, rrr, and it like it happened with Bane in Dark Knight as well, and people criticize him for the exact same thing, where they were just saying like heaps of the dialogue in this was pretty hard to make out in certain scenes where there's other loud sounds going on at the same time, and that's really annoying, like when you're watching that, when it's a complex plot as well, and you just like you need to hear every word.
I can appreciate it like that, but I think, and this is interesting, this just came to me, and this has something to do with time as well, but like, sort of the ultimate, I guess, fetish object, or ultimate, like, desire for, like, studio music is to be absolutely perfect. So when you get criticisms like this, where it's like, oh, I can't hear it, I can't fully hear it, or something, that like a real like kickback from people being like, oh, I should be able to hear the absolutely everything, the little things, the big things, I want to hear this, hear that, there's a huge explosion, you know what I mean, like, so, well, it's too much like real life, I guess, maybe, I don't know, like,
yeah, but I think I feel like that's an unfair, like that's a contradictory thing, because it's like that defense is like saying, like, which, you know, how you can only have it one way. The film, it can either be, like, fully realistic or, you know, obviously we've already said, like, well, it's better allowing films to be non-realistic for the purpose of the plot and the story. So they should also be allowed to be unrealistic with sound mixing and, like, pump up the dialogue so you can hear it. Like, you know, that's fair game. You know, like, obviously have the loud explosions, but, like, it's the same as, like, it's like if you make music and you make a song, it's like saying, like, oh, well, you can't have more reverb on the guitar than the drums because, like, they should sound like they're in the same room. Otherwise, it won't be realistic. But it's like, well, that's bullshit. Like, you can have as much or as little on either in, like, different proportions as you want. Like, it's, you know, there's no rules.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, totally. Like, you know, I'm not gonna say that anyone else's opinion is wrong, but if the major criticism of something like that is I couldn't hear what they were saying, it's not the most terrible thing in the world, you know.
It's not the most terrible. It's not the most terrible thing in the world, but it's just like you've got all this money to make an epic film, but you're not getting the basics right. You know, like you know, epic explosion scenes, like epic action scenes, like well done, good job. But like sound mixing to make the dialogue audible, like it's one of the first things you learn in like music production school, is just like how to mix the audio so that it's intelligible, like how to EQ it, like how loud to make it, not to pan it, things like that. You know, and especially in a film where he is heavily reliant on the dialogue, fair game, that's how you want to play it. Like, well, then it's like he makes it super audible in the fucking dumb scene you know, the scientist is explaining reverse entropy to protagonists, but then like not in scenes where it's like they're saying something important that's highly relevant to who's time traveling, when and why. End rant.
Yeah, look, you're
rant.
Totally right.
No, end rant.
I think it's sort of fascinating as well, like this kickback between like a foreclosed decision, you know, the future is trying to destroy the present. This obviously means that things just get worse from here. But everyone's like, no, actually, it's important that we make the decisions now. Like, I think, and that was sort of fascinating, right? Like,
Yeah.
usually science fiction films don't play that. They just say something like, oh, you know, the future. And you're supposed to infer from that that they're talking about the present exaggerated and you have a duty or responsibility.
Yeah.
But
No,
here it's telling you that, yeah.
it's a good take on time travel in general to kind of consider that because, like, also, you know, I imagine that the world would be a lot more caring place if we had more of a relationship with our future selves. It's like, you know, we're 99% sure that, you know, our children will exist, but because that's not the present, we're less compassionate, like, towards future generations of humans. And, you know, like, I mean, we're less compassionate to future generations than even than past ones. Like, obviously, we're most compassionate to, like, present, or, you know, the closer to the present, the more compassionate we are than, like, people 1,000 years ago. Like, if we think about wars back then, the compassion kind of fades away compared to, like, more recent wars and, like, you know, problems in, like, third world countries right now. And, you know, if we're showing footage or imagery of those
I think
things,
we're
we're like,
pretty
holy shit, that's
terrible.
going on right now during my life. But, like, we're very sure that, like, things are kind of on a pretty negative trajectory environmentally, which will seriously affect future generations, but we don't quite have the compassion to make the necessary changes. It's kind of like this, you know, this cognitive disconnect, where it's like, we're pretty sure the future's going to happen, but because it hasn't happened, we're not 100% sure, and therefore, like, we're a bit reluctant to act on those things because it's like, oh, well, you know, it might happen, but something else might happen, whatever.
That's 100% true. Like, really, like there are a huge amount of possibilities. So many things could happen. So many different, even minute differences could change things. Mean, like, in terms of like war and like famine and stuff like that, it seems like rather distant care. You know, like war has become something you fight on computer screens. Our relationship to charity and stuff is like, you know, it's mask off. We now know that charities keep poor people happening so that they can keep producing as well. Like, charities never fix the problem. And now we're sort of caught in this horrible in-between where it's like, well, we know all these things, but yet the machinery keeps moving. They keep doing that. Like, you know, like it seems like sort of terrible information to have because knowing it doesn't make me feel any better. And then knowing it also makes me feel like I'm fucking impotent, like I can't do anything.
Yeah.
And I guess the sort of second thing with the environment, as it gets progressively worse and worse and worse, and like, you know, it's going to be like large corporations continue doing this sort of stuff, and people are still telling, like, you know, people who chuck like a beer can on the road, like, you're the problem, or you don't buy a key cup, you're the problem. It's like, no, you fucking idiot. Like, it's this huge, massive, like, that's littering. We're talking about pollution, but
Yeah, it's like as soon as you play the
but
moralism game, you lose to the big corporations because, like, they don't have to play. So it's like as soon as, like, we start regulating
do
everyday
play.
citizens and, you know, polarizing and being like, oh, well, like, you're a dickhead because of this tiny reason. Like, you know, you need the team, so you can't, like, condemn people because anyone who is not, like, in the systemic pollution. That's one team, which is most people.
For sure. Well, like, look, I'll give you an example which I think is funny, but I still do it anyways. So I didn't really used to like be so obsessive over recycling, but now, you know, I clean everything with hot water and stuff so there's no residue because that can't be recycled. But we don't even have any recycling plants in WA,
Australia's
and
fucked,
like
man.
Indonesia and
Yeah.
China and all these countries that used to take our recycling or recyclable material have stopped accepting it. So I have no fucking idea where that rubbish goes, but I still do it anyways, you know what I mean? Like, I just still have to like obsessively like clean out these little things, or like tell someone up and be like, no, like that's like this type of plastic or that type of plastic that can't be recycled, this can't be recycled. that's yeah,
Yeah,
you know.
we're one step above like third world countries that just have a single bin for everything. It's like, because like other places I've been to, like Japan, they have like three or four different bins. UK, where I am now, have like the rubbish bin, but then we all there's also like everyone has a food scraps bin, every house that gets collected. So they separate food scraps, actual like rubbish that isn't recyclable, and then recycling even gets broken up like by at the house into cardboard, glass, and like other things like plastics. But it's just like that's such a like it's not that hard for us at the house to do those things, but Australia, like, just like, oh, we don't have the taxpayer money to distribute like extra bins to do that. Like, I don't know how it gets sorted at a, you know, like it's so much harder to sort it at the plant when it's all been dumped into one fucking truck and mixed in together.
Yeah, and apparently there's like near zero, if not zero, recycling plants in WA. Anyway, I think I'm pretty sure
So
anyway,
that's
so
wasted energy
I don't really know what
transporting
the
all that
situation.
shit to get sorted like somewhere else, yeah.
The other thing I was going to say, sorry, I want to double check that just in case I'm talking some shit. There are certainly
That's
some
what
recycling
podcasting is
centres.
about, just ranting about topics you have actual no clue about.
I'm trying to spend more time doing homework. I'm trying to watch the films directly after we talk about them, and then spend that week learning or like researching rather than
Yeah.
watch it the night before and just have some like firing
Bring
out some hot takes.
yeah.
Anyway,
Bring some takes to the table, yeah. It's always helpful.
there's two different sort of takes. There's the like sort of like studied take where you've thought about it and you've made like a cogent argument, and there's the hot take where you're just like, this is an idea, this is an idea, this is an idea. Both have like a good quality to them. But anyway, the thing about the environment as well is interesting because you sort of have like two competing, well, I guess two broadly competing ideas as well. Like one says we have to start recognizing ourselves in a system and that we're no different from like the environment, we're no different from plants and animals, and that we need to sort of flatten difference, I guess. And the other one says, no, we actually need to go so far that we disconnect, and only then, once we're disconnected from it, can we really make changes. I have no idea where I stand on that. But it's kind of fascinating, right? Like, 'cause they sort of both have good points, you know, like maybe doing something like disconnecting from the environment completely would allow people to start actually looking at it and making big changes possible rather than trying to like mediate change or like mitigate it, you know, like, oh, it's just a little pollution over here. That'll be okay. Like,
Yeah, it's hard to say. I feel like we're on in general we're plenty disconnected, too disconnected from the natural world and like the dirtiness of
maybe
it.
the fully disconnect.
I mean, I've observed that so much with like the COVID response, like just yeah, like and you know, I obviously it's so hard to say something like this like without you know, I'm not, you know, fully on board with vaccination and COVID is real, all that. But like, I hate over sanitization of things. This is generally speaking, like not just in the term in the sense of like hand sanitizer, but like, you know, it's such a like Western conquering of nature to like sanitize every like sanitize dialogue, you know, sanitize film so that like there's nothing that might like question the status quo. Like I use the term sanitization in terms of just like not going against the flow of something, but you know, we know that we need that. You need, you know, that's how you cause like positive change is by, you know, unsanitizing like politics, for example, like where, you know, all the speech is sanitized and they have like their, you know, political dialect where they're just like, don't really say anything. And so I hate the kind of like, you know, the kind of desire to separate completely from nature and just have like perfectly sanitized houses and like no exposure to, you know, reality of like, you know, just dirty reality, like dirt, real dirt and like grime and like moisture
Yeah,
and
grit.
cold and discomfort, like things that are very real. Like I feel like it's a never ending quest if we really want to just like never be uncomfortable and never be dirty or exposed to, you know, anything dangerous to our health.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like I think you're right, like with It, in TV shows, like Thick of It, or like even watching like Four Corners or something, you can see that like the sort of disastrous nature of politics comes out on those sorts of things, and we see that it's all like infighting and like squabbling and backstabbing and stuff like that. And then sort of the cold face of it is like reassuring, which is important because people need to feel like there is like a strong leadership. But it's yeah, like in film, like in language as well, like politically correct language, I guess on the face of it sounds quite nice, but like it generally just kind of covers over problems. It doesn't actually do anything. It's sort of just like, like it makes something like, I don't know, racism or something seem like it's sort of in the past,
Yeah, like
but
it's
it's still
solved
totally
by
there, but
just,
you just
but
can't
yeah,
talk about
it's
it
solved by
anymore.
just speaking nicely. Yeah.
Yeah, same with like sexism or something, or really, yeah, there's lots of issues that are just sort of like if you say the right words, nothing will happen. Like it's sort of like a disarming of anything. Like we can just speak in like platitudes or something, I guess.
Yeah. And that alludes to like the core of my like common criticism of just like band-aiding problems. Like it's such a Western thing. Like we'll band-aid the environmental problem by just like making a few green cars. Like and I'm not the ultimate cynic. Like I am, I'm all for doing good in small measures, like and then building up to something bigger, but I am also anti band-aid solutions. Like I'm pro treating the problem at its cause. Like what is the cause of racism? Like probably lack of education. Like it's just people that don't realize that other people are nice just like them. Like and so that they're indoctrinated into racism.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think they are indoctrinated into racism, but I think like because like kids aren't racist,
Yeah, that's what I mean. I
like
don't
you're
think
not born a
anyone is
racist or
born like,
whatever.
yeah, you're not a natural racist. I mean, okay, you are slightly naturally racist in that, like, things, like, it's just a human trait that, like, things that are a bit different, it is, like, evolved to be wary of something that's different to what you've seen. So there's a little tiny bit of but it's not a hatred style of racism. It's just a wariness of, like, okay, that person looks completely different to every other person I've seen so far in my life. Like, so you see, like, uncontacted tribes, when they see a white person, they're like, what the fuck? Like, and they're touching his skin and stuff. So it's, but it's, I wouldn't call that racism, I guess. That's just like a kind of evolved instinctual kind of
That's
wariness.
I think that example that's almost like racial recognition. Like there is a difference, yes.
Yeah.
Like we can apprehend this. You're like they enjoy
I
it.
lost you a little bit there.
They like doing it. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's all good.
Hello. Okay, I think racists enjoy doing it. I think that's it's a big part of it. I think they find themselves, they've sent sort of centered their
Or they
own
at least, yeah, they
subjectivity
think
around it
they
in a way
enjoy
that's just
doing
like,
it. Yeah.
I think I think that's sort of like that would be a real thing, like they'd be like, oh, you're not this, I am this, like you can't be this because yeah,
I'm
so
the good, you're the bad. Yeah.
Exactly. And you start getting all these weird sort of relationships to those sorts of things that we see play out in or every day, really. And even like you can, even someone who thinks they're doing good by like I don't know, sort of into like you see people go to like Africa and look after kids or something, and they actually might be causing more problems by like separating kids or like teaching them some bullshit or whatever, and like
Yeah, like
that's
old Christian fucking missionaries,
missionaries.
yeah.
And that has sort of good intentions, but the intentions really are like you're kind of, I am the master, I am smarter than you, I can show you a better life. And that's just the same sort of thing as well, that's kind of, they enjoy that, right?
Yeah. Entirely misinformed intention. Yeah, like if only everyone in the world was as Christian as me, then it would be fine. It
I
fucking
can
wouldn't be
imagine if
fine.
someone thought something like that. Yeah, I can imagine someone who thinks that would be very angry if that happened, because then they'd be like, oh, I can't enjoy being Christian when all these fucking like devil people around me.
Imagine if the whole, imagine if everyone in the world was Christian or any religion. Like, I just think that would be fucked.
Yeah, well, I guess that sort of idea, or this sort of like the phrase is always like the devil keeps God in business or whatever.
Yeah.
So you'd have to have someone out there who is like excluded or someone who's the like anti-God. Like it couldn't happen. Like, you know what I mean? Like it relies on sort of dyadic relationship.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get back to Tenet. Let's get back to time travel.
All right. Well, I think like I've stated most of my criticisms. I just wanted to state them, like, just because I didn't want to let the film off the hook. And I think I've said, like, I didn't hate it, but it wouldn't be one that I would be keen to watch again anytime soon.
Interesting. This is the second time I watched it. I loved it. Hey, I thought it was sick.
Yeah.
it actually got me back into watching like Bond films. Thinking about playing Metal Gear Solid again. That's the triad right there. That's the three. That's the triangle.
Yeah,
That's
I think also, like, I'm not a big fan of action films, so that sort of like sways my opinion a bit as well. I don't really get much out of them, even if I see them at the cinema. So there's that sort of slight bias, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can totally understand that. Like, action films are some a new sort of love for me, in that like I used to detest them. I thought all they were was like, sort of soft gay porn for dudes who were so straight that they were gay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we all know someone who's into that sort of stuff. And you can kind of see that sort of relationship. Whatever, yeah, we don't want to get too deep into it. But yeah, I thought I've recently softened to action films, and I thought it was amazing. I loved it. I love the sort of reverse driving as well, where he was trying to figure out how to do it. And that'd be hard, wouldn't it? Like, because you have to do the thing before the thing, and how do you?
I couldn't make sense of that, because it's like, wouldn't the car already be doing the driving? Do you know what I mean? Like, how would he
Well,
be able to
it's
exert a
going in
force?
reverse, wasn't it? I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea. There's a lot of that sort of stuff, and then like the explosion where you got hypothermia. I just really like it. Like, I think it's
Everything is
pretty bizarre,
backwards.
but
Yeah,
I
but
like it.
if you really wanted to go all out on critiquing the film, then you could find a lot of things. You could be like, well, this thing wasn't backwards. Like, why not? Like, it's too selective. Where, like, with the hypothermia. I mean, the coolest part was like when the building blew up and like healed at the same time. Like, a part of
Yeah.
it.
That was amazing. And also just I think one of the more most amazing scenes was the wind farm in the ocean. I thought that was really
And everything
beautiful.
was
Like
going
just
backwards.
yeah. And the ships were moving backwards and stuff, and I thought I just really liked that. And that was the start of the film as well, kind of like
That was cool.
yeah, so I thought that was quite amazing. And I think in terms of like if you wanted to be someone who like picks out little things in films, there's tons of YouTube channels that already do that, and they're all terrible, and those people should be,
Oh, no,
they'll be
yeah.
the first against the
I mean, I
Like
did
no
check
one
out
likes.
briefly a couple of like YouTube reviews. I mean, the main one was that video I linked you from that guy who's really good. Like, he's really balanced. That flight, I forget the name, but the one that was titled like Nolan Has an Exposition Problem. Because he's always really balanced. And he's not like a clickbait type of guy. I think he's Thomas Flight, was it?
I can't remember. It was an interesting review. I thought it was pretty interesting interpretation,
Because
but I
he
think
always justifies his reasoning really well. Like, he'll show examples and be like, in this film, like, he explained how Inception, like, it was more realistic when there was a scene of exposition, and DiCaprio would explain something. There would be more reasoning for the characters to be doing that, given the point in the
Was it
movie.
DiCaprio? I thought DiCaprio was in Shutter Island. Or was he in both?
Probably both. He was definitely in
Oh, I think he was in
Inception.
both. Okay, he was in both then. Yeah, I think this guy must be like very keen on like narrative theory or something. So he wants to things to like evolve literarily, I guess, in that like
Well,
things should be in place and.
the thing that is fair about that critique is that, like, the whole point of a movie is that it's not a book. You have visual image and sound. So you're supposed to use those like to tell the story, but obviously you allow dialogue, that's fine, but it's just that it does kill it for like a few people when you overuse the dialogue to tell the story, because it's like, well, I'll just read the book then, you know what I mean? Like a book needs, true, you know, expositional dialogue because it only has text.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm a sucker for, like, I don't know, bad film styles, maybe. I don't know. Like, I like a lot of voiceover. I like a lot of, like, pondering, like, half, like, image half in the screen, half just, like, a big, like, yeah. So, but, like, maybe that's just, like, sort of the interpreter and analyzer analysis.
Yeah, maybe I'm overly critical just because, like, I'm so, you know, anti-Hollywood big budget kind of films, like, because I'm so attached to, like, Stalker, you know, it's old school, low budget, you know, like people fucking died after the filming. I just want the full gritty, grimy, like, yeah, it was a complete disaster to make and like we had no money and
it's a beautiful film as well. Like it's really good, it's written really well, it's very interesting. Stalker is it's a big one.
It's quite expositional. Yeah. So like I can I can tell that to myself and be like, oh, you're just, you know, you're in the ideology, the Tarkovskian ideology, like he could never make a bad film, you know, he'd never do it and put a foot wrong. Like he invented film, you know.
It's true. He did amazing things and like I think he, you know, he deserves what he got as well. Like those science fiction films, amazing. But I think and I guess this is my final thought for Tenet is like, so, you know, like what's the lost object or what's like the object of desire or whatever. And I think for this film, it is the present, the absolute moment in which you can act. Like I think once you talk about it or once you do something or once you even think about it, it's already gone. So like, it's we want to be present, but it's absolutely impossible. There's absolutely no way to be present, although you're always present. And that sort of bizarre contradiction is the sort of the problem of the film. Like they want it, can't ever get it, are actually doing it while they're wanting it.
Okay. You know what I mean? I like that. I would agree and take it a bit further in that, like, if we wanted to take a moral message from the film, I would say it's to have like more connection or compassion to the past and future. Like just treat them as real as you do the present kind of thing, because as it turns out, like they're directly connected.
Yeah, exactly. Just, yeah, remember you have a future and a past. Just
remember that they are real, even though they don't really seem real.
Yeah.
It's a tricky thing to talk about. We don't kind of lack the vocabulary in our language, I guess.
Yeah, you know, the past is all stored up in our brains at the back of our head and the future is yet to happen, you know, so it's easy to forget these things.
Yeah, it's easy to question their legitimacy, especially when, not to go on another tangent, but like even like the entropy physics does question that. Like there's I think it's Brian Greene's Fabric of the Cosmos book where he talks about entropy and explains that like you could like reassemble an entire moment. Like it's like, how do you know that the past is real? Cause like it could just kind of be assembled it could just click and like everything just drops into place. As an explanation of entropy, and like it could also just like reverse, so like you could drop a glass on the ground and it smashes and like there's a physical possibility that like it could just reassemble itself, and that's kind of what Nolan is using in the film, like that possibility basically, that things can't, like it's supposedly physically possible that things like can just randomly reverse their entropy.
Yeah, which I like. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we finished this on a really strong note. Like, I think we totally went so far afield for a bit there, but now we're back, and that was a really good ending, I think.
Yeah, nicely
not
done.
To, you know, toot our own collective horn.
I got to like rag on it, but also like, I just don't want to give the wrong impression. Like, I appreciate the film, and my criticisms have been stated. Like, I guess I'm just saying that like, it could have been better. It could have been really great for me, but I don't know. You know, the average review is like 6.9 out of 10, so that's all right. Probably lower than Inception or Interstellar. I haven't checked those out, but
I think the thing that's in
70% on Rotten Tomatoes
for Tenet.
Yeah,
I mean, like, it's hard to say. There's sort of a popular revolt against Nolan right now as well.
Is it?
So maybe, like, the internet is... Yeah, I think people are saying, you know...
I'm just jumping on board.
Bit of a cunt director.
Oh, really?
You know, and, like, we might say something terrible, like, every director sucks because they have to tell people what to do. Or maybe, like, I don't know, you know, like, who knows?
Half the people are just like, oh, what's this? Like, you can't have a black lead role in an action film. Like, hated it.
Yeah, exactly. If for anything you do, there's going to be like lots of different causal problems.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to hate something for a specific reason. We need to find something that's ultimately like hated for every different reason for the one thing. Like, we need to find the collective hate point. We don't know what that is. That is the internet, I guess, to a certain degree.
At least, I mean, it does feel silly to even kind of like bring it up, but it is worth bringing up because it is the thing. Just and to finish on, like, at least obviously, you know, there's no problem of the film that the lead character is black, like, because it's still rare in action or spy films, especially like given James Bond. And it's
Yeah, that's true, actually, yeah.
like I don't, you know, it's like at least Norm was able to make the film, and it's like, oh, well, would you believe it? Like, you know, that wasn't a problem of the film. Like, even though, you know, it doesn't seem like it should be a groundbreaking thing, but you know, it
Yeah, well,
is
I mean,
just historically.
I think, and this could be the film that we do next week if you're interested, but I think Denzel Washington, the father of protagonist
True, I
here.
didn't even think about him. Yeah.
Yeah, his what's his name? John Washington? John
John
something
David
what
Washington,
Washington?
yeah.
John David. Yeah, that's it. I think, you know, there's sort of a paving of the way there a little bit. And I think if you do want to watch this next week, The Manchurian Candidate, the 2000,
Yeah, sure, man.
2001, 2000, I think here we have, you know, Denzel Washington, action sci-fi, pretty crazy. We might see where his son got it from.
Is he his son?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's
Yeah. I'm
crazy.
pretty sure he is anyways, yeah.
Just like, oh, they have the same last name.
Well, yeah, I heard it from someone else, and I mean, there's been times where
But
I've heard something from people
what?
and it's been wrong.
I
No,
guess
Denzel Washington, his parent. Yeah.
the difference of this is that I'm just looking through Denzel's filmography now, and this this is different to his films, because this was quite Bond styled. You know, like previous, like what else is in this genre? Like the Bourne Identity series or Bond films. It is a very traditionally white role, I guess. But
Yeah, I
no,
mean, there
like
was,
at
I think
least
there
like
was a.
John David Washington, you know, he knocked it out of the park with this. And most people,
Oh,
I
for
think
sure.
most people thought that too. I would say
He was
Book of
amazing.
Eli is probably the most like similar. It's not that similar, but it's probably the most similar film of Denzel's. Does he have like a
I'm still
spy?
going with. Yeah, he is a spy, I'm pretty sure.
What, like Deja Vu? That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Inside
Vantage
Man.
Point or something? Maybe he was in? I can't remember.
Yeah.
But
But
I
it
think
just like
Manchurian Candidate.
this film
That's.
seemed kind of specifically, you know, Bond style, big budget kind of film.
It's the locations as well that make such a Bond film, like
Yeah,
the
yeah, yeah.
Monte
Lots of
Carlo,
helicopter
like
footage of
the
like islands
Caribbean,
and yeah.
yeah, like fancy cars, Also, like the scene where John David Washington fights those guys in the kitchen of the restaurant, that seemed very Bond to me.
Yeah.
And he kicked their asses as well. He fucked them up,
As any
like.
good spy would.
Yeah, like they thought that they were hot shit, and he like fucked up some tube with a cheese grater. Oh my god, yeah, I love that scene. He handled it so well as well. He was just like, came in, he was like, oh my, oil. Just like, oh, what's up? And then just started kicking ass.
There's two Manchurian candidates. There's 1962 and 2004. I assume you mean 2004?
Yeah, 2004, because that's the Denzel Washington one. I think the earlier one is better. I would argue that it's better, but 2004 one is. Has some very interesting things that I would like to discuss. It's just like just before the like mask of like sort of like the 21st century capitalism was pulled off directly. There's still like intrigue and you know backdoor war and stuff like that. There's a lot of interesting stuff.
All right, cool, man. Where do you want to put this on your rankings?
Somewhere, it's in my top five. I don't really know what they are, but it's at the top, but not the top. It's definitely like above Terminator. Like this is Terminator is the only one I can really like bring it to. Like I think those two like kind of couple would because they're both movies.
I'll write out the list this week just so we can look at what number we're up to and everything. And it might be nice to actually, like, I can just make a spreadsheet where we have our own order each. And you know, you can
Yeah,
jumble it around if it, like, as weeks go by. But yeah,
we
so
might have
this will
to
be
watch
somewhere near the
Terminator 2
middle
at
for me.
I would definitely see it again in like a cinema, I reckon.
Yeah. All right, man. Anything else?
But yeah, all right. That's everything. I gotta go to dinner soon anyway.
Oh, enjoy.
We live in large every
The doctor at
I
life.
miss. I'll enjoy double for you, because I know you're living alone right now. You're living with the family. Can't go outside.
It's all right. It's yeah, the sun is out. It's actually a blue sky. It's pretty nice. You know, see?
Oh, that is nice. I mean, it's the virus that's out there. Oh, whoa.
It's
Oh, that's so British.
coming to you through the camera. Yeah. It blows in the wind. It's like the mist film. That's how people act, man. I'll be like going for a run and they're like, "Don't breathe." But nah.
It's true. That's exactly what happens. But anyways, man, take care. I
Yep.
will see this time next week, or when would you like to do it?
Friday or Sunday. Yeah, either one's good. Friday's New Year's Eve, I think. So I don't know what you're
Yeah, it
doing.
is.
Do you have
Sunday?
plans? Yeah,
I'm
Sunday's
not sure
G.
yet. Hey, I still gotta figure it out. But I think Sunday.
All right, cool, man.
Yeah, Sunday 5 p.m.
Yep.
or whatever time it is for you, I guess.
Yeah,
Yeah.
five's
All
good.
right.
Yeah, that's nine for me.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, easy. All right. Peace out, man.
All right, see you, man.
Catch you.